Welcome to the Hinckley Institute of Politics. My name is Arya Irani, and I will be the host for today's Hinckley Forum. The Hinckley Institute was established in 1965 through the generous bequests of the Noble Foundation and Robert H. Hinckley. The Institute is dedicated to teaching students respect for practical politics and the principle of citizen involvement in government. The Hinckley Institute offers paid internships to students of all majors here locally, in Washington, D.C., and in 35 countries around the globe. The Hinckley Institute also offers classes, the nation's only campaign management minor, week-long experiences to Washington, D.C., and over $70,000 in academic scholarships. We invite students to go next door or to our website at www.hinckley.utah.edu for more information. The title of today's forum is The Impact of the Federal Government on Local Government. Today's guest is Peter Caroon. Peter Caroon was elected mayor of Salt Lake County in 2004 general election, becoming the second mayor in Salt Lake County's history. As mayor, he worked to foster honest and ethical government at a time when Salt Lake County was exceeding a population of 1 million. He emphasized planning, not politics, to manage this growth. His fiscally conservative policies balanced the county government's budget while expanding protected open space and introducing more environmentally sound policies. Mayor Caroon made county government more accessible to all citizens by holding open-door meetings for the public and promoting greater diversity on the county's 100 boards and commissions. He promoted economic development and greater communication and coordination between county government and private sector business and nonprofits. The Salt Lake Area Chamber of Commerce awarded him Public Official of the Year. In December, he finished a close second to replace outgoing State Senator Ben McAdams, who vacated a seat to succeed Peter Caroon as mayor of Salt Lake County. Peter Caroon holds a BS in civil engineering from Carnegie Mellon University, an MS in real estate finance and investment New York University, and a JD from Golden Gate University. He and his wife, Amy, a U of U graduate, have three children. His twin, Christopher, lives in Salt Lake City as well. This morning, he will speak to the topic, the impact of federal government upon local government, and he looks forward to all of your questions. Let's welcome our speaker.
Well, good morning to you. At least somebody's awake yet. Good morning to you. All right. Good morning. So I'm not the mayor anymore, so this is the first time I've actually got it up to speak in front of public since I've been mayor, so I might be a little rusty, so I apologize, although I was probably a little rusty when I was mayor as well. I always said dull government was good government, and I was probably known as being a little bit dull, but I'll try not to be too dull for you this morning. I enjoyed my position as county mayor. It was a lot of fun, and now I'm back into the private sector and enjoying that as well. So I think public service is something, it's not a lifetime appointment like some of our elected officials think. It's something you do for a short period of time, and then you go back into something else. I think that was the purpose of our founding fathers and sisters and mothers, and that's the way it should be. Some of our Utah politicians don't feel that way, though, and they stay in for life. So I hope you consider public service at some point in your future, one way or another. But don't make it a lifetime thing. Do it either as a hobby, part-time, or do it full-time for a short period. But I was listening to the radio this morning, and they were talking about sequestration. Does anybody know what sequestration is? You've heard about it. Well, it's coming in 9 days, probably. And I decided this morning as I was coming in here to look it up to see what the word actually means, sequestration. Well, first of all, it's the act of sequestering. And it says either, one, a legal writ authorizing a sheriff or commissioner to take into custody the property of a defendant who is in contempt until the orders of a court are complied with. Which sounds a little bit like what Congress may be doing, or a deposit whereby a neutral depository agrees to hold property in litigation and to restore it to the party to whom it is adjudged to belong. So I'm not sure why they came up with the word sequestration, but sequestration essentially is going to be a massive budget cut and some tax increases unless the federal government does something, the president and Congress do something. We don't know what will happen, but all signs are that they're not going to do anything or they're going to punt yet again. And one of the issues, I think, for our nation is that Congress keeps kicking the can down the road. They won't come up with a final decision as to what they're going to do with the budget. They haven't passed a budget in how many years now, Tim? They haven't passed a budget in four years. And if us in local government or state government tried to do that, we'd be run out of town. But the federal government manages to have done that for over 4 years now, and they'll probably continue doing that into the future. But I was asked to speak a little bit about how much of our local governments are affected by the federal government, and I can tell you it's a lot. I was looking at the state budget several years ago. I actually ran for governor in 2010 and got handily defeated, but I learned a lot about our state government in the process, and I realized that about a third of our state government's budget comes from the federal government. So our state does rely on the federal government. And this year, if you're watching our legislative session, they're talking about the budget. They're talking about passing a base budget, but they're not going to pass a final budget because they don't know what that budget's going to look like, because when you have a third of your budget based on the federal government's budget and you don't know what's going to happen over the next 9 days at least or into the future, you can't really set our final state budget either. And, of course, the local governments have the same issue. A lot of that money coming from the federal government to the state government then goes to the local governments as well. The state usually skims off a little bit off the top, so every time it comes down a layer, somebody takes a little piece off the top. So when it comes through from the federal government to the state government to the local government, the state usually takes probably at least 10% of that amount to administer the funds, and then they pass it down to the to the local governments. And sometimes we take the money and pass it on to the nonprofit communities or somebody else, and we have a staff too that administers it. So sometimes I think it's not the most efficient system when you're taking money from the federal government to the state government to the local government to the nonprofit community, and everybody's taking a piece of the pie. So by the time you know that 100% of that money gets down to where it's supposed to go, I can't say how much is left, but I would say at least probably 10 to 20% of that money has already been taken for administering the money and administering the programs. And of course, you have to do it because we don't want to just hand out money without knowing where it's going or making sure that the money that is being used effectively. But sometimes I say we spend more time guarding the kitty, more times trying to make sure nobody steals the money than it would cost if somebody actually stole a few bucks here and there. So not that we want anybody to steal money, but sometimes we spend too much money just guarding that money and safe protecting that money. But anyway, so we get a lot of money that comes from our federal government down to our local governments, and so we rely on the federal government, and so if something happens, it makes us nervous. Does anybody know how much they're talking about in the sequestration, what percentage of the budget it is? And I could be wrong with my answer, but anybody know how much it is? I think it's only like 3%, right? I think they're talking about 3% of the budget, which doesn't sound like a lot to me, but I realize when they're talking about 3% of the budget in the federal government, like other governments, there's a lot of different budgets. There's not just one budget. So in Salt Lake County government, we had a municipal services budget for the unincorporated areas. We had a general fund budget for the countywide funds. We also had ZAP budget, the Zoo Arts and Parks budget. So we had money that came in from taxpayers that went out to pay for parks and recs. So we actually had a bunch of different budgets. So when they're talking about the sequestration, I think a lot of the budgets aren't going to be affected, some of the larger budgets. So I think Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, I'm not sure that those are going to be affected by sequestration. But it'll be other budget functions, a lot of the monies which come down to our local governments. And so can anybody give me some services that are provided on a local level that the federal government helps pay for?
Police.
Police. Fire, yeah. Transportation, yeah. Yeah, very good. So I decided this morning, as I was riding my stationary bike to get on the county Salt Lake County website and try to jog my memory about what services were provided. And they had an A to Z list of all the services that are provided. So I'm going to give you a few of them. So actually, one of the larger areas for Salt Lake County is health and human services. So what does that mean? We have Job Corps programs, for example. So we help young people find jobs in the community. We have aging services, like Meals on Wheels. We serve 1,000 Meals on Wheels every day in Salt Lake County to elderly people or shut-in people. So that's a federally funded program. Substance abuse and mental health services are funded, not all by the federal government, but a lot of by the federal government. So that's an important service. Disease control, infections and disease controls. Anybody remember the H1N1, the Heine flu, I think they called it, or swine flu? That was something that the federal government helped us pay for. Youth services, so when children get abused, we have a place called the Criminal Justice Center. So there's one up in the avenues here where kids can go and speak safely to police or investigators or see a nurse or a doctor. That's something that the federal government helps us pay for. We have after-school programs that the federal government helps us pay for as well. We have a program called WIC. It's called Women, Infants, Children. It's a health program for lower-income pregnant women to make sure that they have healthy babies and understand how to live healthily as they're giving birth to their child. We also have other programs. We have housing programs that the federal government helps us pay for as well. So, the homeless shelter, for example, or permanent housing for people who are homeless. The federal government gives us some money to help pay for that. We have something called new tax credit programs. Anybody know what a tax credit is? So essentially what happens is the federal government says you can raise money in your community for a special program, and a private investor can come in and buy these tax credits. So, for example, I used to be in the housing business where I wanted to build affordable housing. So the federal government gives tax credits to the state governments, and then the private developers come in and they get some of that allocation, and then they sell it to a private investor for probably 75 cents on the dollar. So essentially the companies who buy those can reduce their taxes by 100% amount, but they buy it for 75%. It's very complicated. I probably didn't explain it very well. Big companies can reduce their taxes by buying these tax credits, and then that money that they pay goes to a private developer to build housing. So it does some good in the community. It's no money, no current money out of the budget. It's sort of future money, so it's lost money in the future, but it's always easier to give away future money than giving away current money. So that's why tax credit programs are pretty favorable to these kind of housing programs or other programs. We also have something called New Market Tax Credits, which is a program that helps governments or, again, private developers build in low-income communities. So, for example, Salt Lake County, we got some New Market Tax Credits to build a library out in Magna. It helped us fund probably 25% of that funding. economic development grants, so that's another area where the federal government will give us some money. We'll put it into a pool. We'll loan it out to small businesses who otherwise couldn't get money from a bank. So that's another federally subsidized program. Somebody said fire and police. So sometimes the federal government helps us pay for police in our community, or they pay for emergency services as well. So if you see a lot of those big emergency vehicles when there's a big accident or a big spill or a terrorist incident, those are usually funded by the federal government as well. And after 9/11, we saw a lot of money coming into emergency services and into our community. Elections, the federal government helps pay pay for elections in some instances. When they changed machines, when we went from the card punch machines, you remember the incident in Florida where the little card punch machines got jammed up? So the federal government decided, well, we need to change the system. So we now have all electronic voting machines in Salt Lake County. The federal government helped us pay for some of those. Gang prevention, graffiti prevention. We have refugees who come into our community. Anybody know that Utah is a refugee state? So we accept refugees who come from other countries, Asian countries, South America, other areas around the globe. We get thousands of refugees every year who come into Utah, and our federal government helps us pay for those refugees for 3 to 6 months while they're getting on their feet. The refugees have to come here. They have to learn how to speak the language. If they don't speak English, they have to learn how to live in a community that they're not used to. So they have to learn about the community. Some refugees have been living in refugee camps, so they've never had the opportunity to live in a home with a stove and stairs and all those kind of different amenities. They also have to find jobs while they're here as well. So if you think about refugees coming into the United States and then Utah, it can be a challenging times for them. But they only get three to six months to figure all that out. So in some sense, the federal funding is just a drop in the bucket for what they might need to get on their feet initially. Environmental protection. The federal government gives us a lot of money for environmental protection. The watershed, for example, protecting our watershed, our water quality as well. We can generally live a week or so without food, but we can't live very long without water. So water quality is very important, and the federal government helps us in that regard. One of the reasons is that water doesn't know any boundaries. Water goes from state to state, and Utah is part of the Colorado Compact, so we get a lot of our water from the Colorado River, and there's a lot of jurisdictions involved. So the federal government usually comes in when things are cross-jurisdictional, and so they help us with water quality and protecting our watershed as well. Somebody mentioned transportation, so the tracks line, a lot of that was funded by the federal government, not all of it, but some lines were funded primarily by federal funds. The Front Runner as well was funded with a substantial amount of federal funding as well. So we get a lot of money for transportation. Roads, somebody mentioned as well. We have a federal gas tax. So when you go pump up your car, I can't remember what it's like, 25 cents, I think. I can't remember exactly what the federal gas tax is. But when you go fill up your car or somebody else's car, part of that money goes to the federal government, and it comes back to the states to help build their federal highway system primarily. Then we have grant programs as well. So I mentioned that sometimes the money comes from the federal government and then through the state and local government to the nonprofit community. That some of these block grants, the community development block grants is sort of the name for them, they actually come directly from the federal government to the local government, so they skip the state government, which we're always, as a local government, we're always happy when the state doesn't get to skim off part of the money for themselves. So we have something called the Community Development Block Grant. We have something called the Social Services Block Grant. We have Emergency Services Block Grants as well. And so block grants essentially are a certain amount of money that you get from the federal government, depending on your population in the community. So Salt Lake County has how many people? 1.1 million. And so we get a certain amount of money because we have that size population, and also because we have low income areas as well. So the money's supposed to be targeted towards lower income areas or lower income communities as well. And people think of Utah as a rural state, but with 1.1 million people just in Salt Lake County alone, we actually we would be bigger than, I think, this population of five or six states. So Salt Lake County is actually an urban area, and we're actually more dense than the city of Boston. So We are a very urban area here in the Wasatch Front. And then 80% of our population lives within an hour of Salt Lake City. So northwest, south, east, you'll find 80% of the state's population right here along the Wasatch Front. We also have nursing programs, a program called the Nurse Family Partnership, which is a program where nurses go into homes of lower-income families and help them with their health needs. So, again, there's a lot of different programs that the federal government helps local governments with. And there's always the question, should we be relying on the federal government? There's the, you know, the... It's usually the conservative versus the liberals and a whole bunch of people in between. Mostly the conservative side says we don't want the federal government in our lives. We'll figure it out ourselves. And if we need to come up with solutions and funding, we'll do it here on the local level. We don't want the federal government getting into our business. On the other hand, you have a lot of people who think that our federal government and our community as a whole, if somebody's in need, whether it's education or food or housing or health care, that it's our job to help all of our citizens and sort of equalize the playing field for everybody. And so as you have your discussions about the role of federal government and state government and local government, those are sort of a lot of the discussions that happen in politics. And Utah is a conservative state. A lot of people in Utah think we don't want the federal government controlling our lives very much, although the federal government does control a lot of our lands in Utah. I think 90% of our lands, if I'm not mistaken, are controlled by the federal government. So we have a lot of people who either work for the federal government or dependent upon the federal government for their livelihoods. So when we talk about federal funding, it's not just for programs for governments, it's also jobs in our communities. So if you go to a national park or you work for the Environmental Protection Agency in Utah, there's a lot of federal funds that are creating jobs in our communities. So sometimes our state government, while they like to bash the federal government, they're just as quick to put their hands out to get money for programs or jobs and things like that. So I think sometimes our state government is a little hypocritical when they start bashing the federal government and then turn around and complain when the feds cut jobs in our local communities. And so there's the back and forth and a lot of tension that's involved between our governments. But at the end of the day, I think our federal government does make a big difference in our communities in Utah, and we do depend on them. And sometimes I think some of our conservative leaders are right. Maybe we could use a little bit less federal government in our lives, but if we're going to make those cuts, we have to do it slowly. You can't shock the system. And if the federal government just stopped funding the state of Utah, we'd go into a pretty deep recession pretty quickly. So federal government's important to all of us in our daily lives. And in some way or another, you're involved in something that the federal government has probably helped subsidize in one way or another, whether it's the housing you live in or student grants or whatever it might be. So while we don't always love the federal government, they actually do provide a lot in our community. So that's all I wanted to mention, but wanted to take questions from you. And usually you have pretty good questions, and they're better than anything that I could come up with. So feel free to ask a question. Tim will always ask the first question if nobody else will.
So. I always have questions that no one else does, but I think you have a question.
So, yeah, we're going to do questions now. If you have a question, raise your hand. I'll come to you. Remember to speak clearly into the microphone and say a little bit about yourself before the question.
I'm Mark Ellis. I'm a freshman here at the university, and I haven't decided my major yet, but I'm looking into political science. But I'm just wondering what the sequestration of that 3% in the federal government would be like. What are they going to cut?
I think they'll cut probably health and human services. So some of those programs I mentioned, like the Nurse Family Partnership or housing programs or the Meals on Wheels program. I think we'll see cuts there. Again, it's not fun to have cuts, but you know, I think we could probably survive. But the ones who end up having to pick up the slack are the nonprofits in the community. So if the government isn't funding them, then the nonprofits have to go out and try to fill the gap, and then they're asking money from, then they come back and ask money from government or individuals or businesses. And so, you know, the, even if the money goes away, the need doesn't. So in some sense, the need gets bigger as things get worse. So during this last recession, you know, there's more demand on the local governments, even though we have less tax revenues coming in. And so that's one of the dilemmas. In bad times, there's always more need for services. So we've had some bad times. So if they make some significant cuts, it'll just hurt those who have already been suffering through the bad times.
Hi, my name is Arit. I'm a political science major here at the University of Utah. Thank you very much for your presentations. I have two simple questions here. My first question is, you mentioned just now and you explained a little bit about the how does the federal government affect the state-local government. My question is, how do you think the state-local government in this case affect the federal government in what way? And my second question is, as a former mayor, as you mentioned just now, that there are a lot of problems going on between the state-local governments and the federal government. So how do you solve this kind of problem and to kind of make the... Because I understand, as far as I understand, we need kind of a good and a strong relationship between the state-local governments and the federal government. Thank you.
What the state does involve the federal government and affect the federal government in some sense. In some sense, the federal government is there to help the states and work with the states and work with through state issues. Just an example, there's an aquifer between Nevada and Utah. It's called the Snake Valley Aquifer. The water comes in. 60% off the Nevada side goes into the aquifer, and 60% of the water ends up in Utah, and then vice versa. 40% of the water comes from the Utah side, 40% comes in from the Utah side, but then only 40% ends up on the Nevada side. So that's an issue where we have a dispute with between two states, and that's where the federal government then has to get involved to decide. How is it going to be resolved? And actually, the federal government, a bill was passed by former Senator Bob Bennett saying that there could be no water rights given out until the two states came to an agreement, a written agreement. And so we haven't come to a written agreement yet. One of the issues is that we don't believe that there's really any significant more water that can be taken out of that Snake Valley aquifer. So sometimes the federal government gets involved in local disputes between states. What else do the states do that affect our federal government? There's a dispute right now in southern Utah about they're called RS-2477 roads, where the state says that we actually have roads that go through federal lands, and we think these are roads that have been in existence for a long time, and so the federal government can't tell us that we can close off these roads. So a couple of years ago, there was actually an ATV rally where one of our state representatives gathered a group of people to drive, broke down, I think, a gate and decided they were going to drive through federal lands on what they considered were state roads. I think the federal government decided not to do anything about that, but it's just an example where sometimes the state is conflicting with our federal government and doing things that are causing issues. Of course, you know, one of the biggest issues is when we have natural disasters in a local community or some kind of major oil spill or toxic release. So sometimes we're doing things in our local communities that cause issues beyond our own state borders. So if you have an oil plant that explodes, you know, sometimes what goes up into the atmosphere and the air can affect neighboring states, so the federal government will help get involved in that situation. So there's a lot of things we do on the local level where the state or the federal government ends up, the state level where the federal government ends up getting involved. Good question.
Hi, I'm Rochelle Roberts, and I'm a political science and biology major. And I guess I was just curious if there is a way in which the state governments can become less dependent on the federal government. Obviously, there's a lot of funds that come there, and there's a lot of mandates that come down that say they have to spend money in certain areas. But is there a way for us to be more fiscally responsible, since it's obviously a big issue, not only on a national level, but on local levels as well?
There is. Somebody once described it as crack cocaine. Where, you know, once you get addicted to it, it's hard to get off of it. And really, in some sense, that's really what happens over time. You know, the more money you take, you get a few extra police officers in your community, and all of a sudden, you know, you're gonna stop taking that money and cut the police officers, or you're gonna raise taxes locally to pay for it. So, if the federal government doesn't provide the funds, either we have to cut the program or raise local taxes to pay for the programs. And sometimes the state government says, "Yeah, let's do that. Let's cut the federal funding, and we'll just pay for it ourselves." They usually don't go down that path when they realize that they have to raise taxes locally. And if you're a politician, what's the quickest way to get thrown out of office is raise taxes on your population. So what usually happens is this: if the state government decides that they're going to cut or not take federal funding, what they usually do is push it down to the local level. So they'll, again, the needs don't go away. So they'll say, all right, we're not going to take the federal money anymore. And so they stop taking the federal money. Of course, a lot of that money then is supposed to get transferred down to the local government. And so then the local government doesn't get it. So then we have to figure out a way how to pay for it. And again, the needs are usually there. People are still homeless in the streets. People, kids still get abused in the communities. So we have to figure out a way to either pay for it or try to rely more on our business community and nonprofit community to pay for it. And so, yes, it can happen. If it happens, it should happen slowly, so we don't shock the system. We do things slowly and figure out slowly how to pay for it ourselves over time, then I think that's a good way to do it. Do we have a question here and then here?
My name is Carter Folger. I'm a student of political science here at the U. You're one of the big Ds that came out of Utah. And I was just kind of, I haven't seen a lot of the partisan, we have had legislatures in here, and they've been talking to us, legislators here, and they've been talking to us, and they said that it's not that big of a deal. When you get to the federal level, there's a lot of bipartisan, everything split across lines, but on the state level, it's a little bit easier to kind of work within that. So in a very, very conservative state as a D, did you find any, I don't know, was it easy to work with the legislature as a mayor, or?
It really depended on the issue. I mean, when your legislatures, I think 82%, 85% one party, there really isn't any issue about working together because the one party's going to get whatever they want anyway. So in some sense, when legislators come in here and say that everybody's working well together, it's all, because it's all, basically all the same party, and so it doesn't make a difference. And we generally would work well with the legislature. I mean, we weren't going to go up there and start asking for money for controversial issues because we knew we wouldn't get it. So in some sense, the lines are pretty clear, whereas if you have a more balanced government, you might take a chance and ask for money for a program that maybe one side wouldn't support, but the other side would. So I think in some sense, by having a one-party state, you know where your boundaries are, and there's not a lot of gray area. But then again, a lot of issues aren't controversial issues. You know, building roads, everybody needs roads in their community. If you put it through an environmentally sensitive area, that's going to be an issue. But funding for roads and transportation and other programs aren't controversial. So I'd say 90% of the issues aren't controversial, but for those 10% of the issues that are, the one-party state's going to do what it wants anyway. So, and in Salt Lake County, I thought we had a pretty balanced government. Actually, we did have a balanced government. We had, during my term, 2 years,
where we had Democrats controlling the council. It was 5 Democrats to 4 Republicans. For 6 years, I had 5 Republicans to 4 Democrats on the council, and then I was the Democratic mayor. So in some sense, we had pretty good balance. So I would say the good ideas got challenged, and the stupid ideas got challenged as well. We're up at the legislature. The good ideas don't get challenged, and the stupid ideas don't really get challenged either. So it's, I think that's a problem in a one-party state. But you know, you look as the minority, you learn to work with the majority, and you know, sometimes you have to go along to get along. Yep.
My name is Dallin Johnson. I'm an economics major here at the U. And during your term as mayor, obviously there was a big recession during that time. And what do you feel was the most important or most critical policy that you and the county put into effect during that recession in order to kind of ease the effects of it?
I think the most critical – sorry, we cut you off. I think the most critical thing that we did was not to cut critical services and not to lay off employees. As I mentioned earlier, in tough times – There's a more of a demand for services, not less of a demand for services. So if you cut critical services during a recession, it just pushes that down onto the nonprofit community or others in the community, or you just deal with things that you probably don't want to see happen. Also, we didn't lay off people. My philosophy is if a local government lays off somebody, what happens? A, during a recession, A, they're not going to be able to find a job. B, they're going to be depending on some other government to pay for them not to be working. So I didn't want to lay off anybody because, to me, it didn't make any sense for me to lay off anybody. So we did have early retirement programs. So if somebody was getting ready to retire, we gave them a little incentive to retire. If somebody left their job, we didn't rehire. So we cut a lot of the middle out. We cut almost 20% of our budget, 2008-2009. But I think we let off three people out of, you know, an employee base of 7,000 to 8,000. So we decided we weren't going to lay off people and we weren't going to cut critical services. We just did through attrition, early retirement, things like that.
My name is Quinn Sill, studying political science and international studies. I know most of our federal leaders on Capitol Hill really strongly argue in favor of state and local governments' rights and empowerment through the 10th Amendment. So do you think this is a good approach of lessening federal dependency?
I do. I think it would be good to lessen federal dependency. I think the federal government is creeping into areas maybe it would be better not to have them in or have ourselves less dependent on them. I think education is one of those areas where I think education really is more local and we should not rely on the federal government to fund our education system. But since our state has been defunding education for the last 20, 30 years, you know, I think we've found that we probably have to rely on the federal government now. So I think we've got to a point where, you know, we're in a hole, especially in our education system, where it's going to be hard to get out of it. Our scores are getting worse. Our class sizes are not getting any better. And so I think we've got a real issue in Utah with our education system. And it'll be nice not to rely on the federal government for funding. But you know, now we're in such a hole that it's going to take some digging to get out of it. And again, if we're not paying for it on the federal level through, you know, nationwide taxes, then we're going to be paying for it locally. But it would be nice to lessen our dependency on our federal government. It's just going to take some time.
Tyler Calder, I'm an econ major here at the U. As mayor, did you ever feel that there was anything that was overfunded by the federal government and anything that was underfunded by the federal government?
Overfunded and underfunded. That's a good question. All depends on your perspective, but I would say sometimes I talked about 9/11 previously. So after 9/11, sometimes the government is reactionary, and that's typical of all governments is reactionary. So after 9/11, it was all of a sudden, okay, we've got security concerns now. So all the cities say, we want our big, massive, you know, emergency response vehicle. Next thing you know, you've got every city in the valley with this big, massive emergency response vehicle, when in reality, the county governments were responsible for countywide emergency services. So what happened after all that, then some of the cities said, well, we provide this service. Why is the county providing this service? So now all of a sudden you have, you know, 16 cities providing a service that we should be doing on a larger scale. So I think in some sense, the federal government, after 9/11, overfunded some of these emergency services and, you know, a lot of the toys that, I call them toys, that came with them, these big trucks and big vehicles. Doesn't mean they're not valuable to the community, but we should have been doing it more on a countywide level or state level rather than on a more local level. So I think that's an area that was overfunded. Underfunded, I don't know that anything's been underfunded. I think federal government does a pretty good job of funding health and human services. There's always going to be more of a need than there is the money to go along with it. So, you know, all these programs with Meals on Wheels or the Nurse Family Partnership, there's never enough money to fund all the programs. I wouldn't say there's anything's underfunded, though. I might rethink that, but I think there's never enough money, so whatever they give is usually helpful.
Rochelle Roberts again. I want to know, the president's been talking about universal pre-K as being something we do federally. Do you think that's something that would help our education system? Obviously, it's something you don't agree with the federal government doing, but do you see it as a benefit, or do you see it as not helping as much as it's...
I see it as a benefit, and my three children are graduates of the University of Utah preschool program, so proud Utes graduates. Yeah, she went on the president's circle there. There's the Child Development Center, which I think was great for our children. I think preschool does make a huge difference for families, especially in communities where they're not necessarily getting the parental attention that they might otherwise get. You know, in a lot of communities these days, you have two parents working, and so the kids are left with a caretaker or a grandparent, and they may not be being read to at night or, you know, getting those basic skills that preschoolers need. At 0 to 5 is the most important time period for learning, and those 0 to 5 is when you learn to learn. So if kids aren't learning to learn in the early grades, then they don't learn in the later grades. They fall behind. They don't learn to read as quickly, and, you know, it just gets harder and harder. So I think preschool is very important. Maybe not for every family, but I think it's important that we have it available for everybody who wants to have their kid in preschool, especially in the lower income communities where there's not a lot of parental supervision because both parents have to work.
Peter, you spoke about the need for clean water. My question is about the need for clean air. We're in Salt Lake County. 37 to 40% of Utah's population is here in Salt Lake County. Dirty air, filthy air, doesn't respect artificial governmental boundaries. As the mayor of Salt Lake County, arguably you would be the third ranking chief executive officer in the state after the governor, maybe the mayor of Salt Lake City and the mayor of Salt Lake County. In that capacity, given the nature of the problem, given we all need clean air, how did you confront that problem, interacting with these other two individuals and others who are, like you, mayors of Utah's 245 cities and towns dealing with this problem?
Just a quick story. I mean, just even recently, you know, I had somebody from out of state coming into town. They were talking about doing some business here in Utah, and I think three people who we met with apologized for our air quality as he was meeting with them. And then during the winter months, we get Sundance Festival that comes here. So we get a lot of people who come from out of state here, and then we also have the Outdoor Retailers Convention as well. And so we get a lot of people from out of state. And one of our goals is to bring business here to Utah. But could you imagine coming here and wanting to start a business, and you get off the plane and you can't even see down the street because of our air pollution, and then, you know, essentially the whole month of January we couldn't see very far. So we do have a significant pollution issue here in Utah, and we have to work on it collectively between our federal, state, and local governments. The federal government's the one who sets the standards. We have something called a 2.5 ppm or particulate matter standard. So any of you are scientists, probably know it better than I do, but you can't have more than so many particles that are 2.5 micrograms big, which is not very big, but it gets into your lungs, and then you have trouble breathing, and so we have increased heart attacks. We have more people who get asthma because of the air quality. And there's no silver bullet to fix it. Again, we live in a big bowl in Salt Lake County, so we have an air quality issue that's not going to go away, but it's vehicles, it's buildings, and it's industry. Essentially, some people said it's a third that affect our air quality. Cars are a huge issue, so the best thing we can do is either get out of our cars or drive more efficient cars. And so the state and the county and the city, we had our clean air programs encouraging people to get out of their cars, ride their bikes, or telecommute, or do something else to not have to drive a car. Trip chaining, where you, instead of going to the gym and then going to the store, you go to the gym and the store and then back home. So there's a lot of things we can do on that front. Mass transportation is important. So I think the feds and the state and the local governments work to get more mass transportation. Again, getting people out of cars. Industry is another area. So it's important that we enforce our industry regulations. Obviously, in Utah, we've got a lot of industry that pollutes. Pollution is part of industry, so you can't take away the pollution from the industry, but you can certainly reduce it. So whether it's mining or the oil refineries or whatever it is, the more we can do to reduce the pollution from industry, the better. So I think in Utah, our biggest issue is just enforcing the regulations. And then buildings. Buildings give off a lot of emissions when you heat them or cool them. And so if we can make more efficient buildings, I think that's very important. Salt Lake County, if you look on the corner of State Street and 6th South, there's a big empty lot there. We're supposed to be building a net zero building. It's a building that will produce as much energy as it consumes. It's going to have, I think, solar on it. It's designed in a way to let natural light in, so you don't need as many lights. It will also be designed in a way where people have to think about how they're working in the building, so there won't be a lot of microwaves. There won't be any space heaters under people's desks, so that it will eventually be a net zero building. And I think in 20 years or more, we could have more and more of these net zero buildings, homes, certainly. There's geothermal energy in Utah. There's wind energy. There's a lot of energy sources that we can use to reduce pollution coming out of our buildings. So. And we're working on the federal, state, and local level. Out of the universities comes a lot of research about how we can reduce pollution and invent new inventions that can help us. For example, out of Utah State University, there's a technology that's actually being used on this campus. There's going to be a bus line where there's a battery underground that will charge the bus. It's going to go across campus here. Instead of having a diesel bus or another polluting bus, it'll be an electric battery that will charge it. It's a new technology, and it probably can be used around the world in other areas as well. So there's a lot of good technology that's coming out of the universities.
So I'd like to conclude with one more question, and you actually hit upon this with the net zero buildings. What are some steps that local government can take to prosper the renewable energy world, prosper renewable energy use locally in Salt Lake?
And I think that's where a government has a role, is to take the first step where maybe it's not economically feasible for business to do it, But you know, why not build, have government build the first net zero building or the first LEED certified building, which is pretty much what we tried to do. And then architects then are incentivized to learn how to build these buildings. Contractors then understand how to build these type of buildings, and the more it becomes commonplace, the more the cost comes down. It's sort of like cell phones or computers or any other new technology. It's very expensive at first, and then it gets cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. And so that's where I think government does have a role, is to help incentivize and you know, start the process, and then it'll eventually drive the cost down. So now, you know, 10 years ago, I don't think anybody built a LEED certified building. Now most of our buildings are LEED certified, which means leadership in energy and efficient design. And now net zero buildings are something new, but I think 10, 20 years we'll see more and more of those.
If I could just follow up on this, the Salt Palace. When it was, the original Salt Palace was, when it was constructed in the late 1960s, was seen as an opportunity to revitalize a deteriorating area of just west of downtown Salt Lake City. But the new Salt Palace, in terms of its arena, its convention center, now brings in tremendous, it makes us easily, we can compete with New York City and all other cities throughout the country. We have a convention center that is just as large and as nice as any other city. Could you speak to the energy, the way in which energy is provided to this very large structure downtown? And also, to what extent would you sit down with, say, the governor or the mayor of the city and talk about this matter of air quality, and maybe with federal officials as well?
So the Salt Palace Convention Center, it's a big box. Big boxes require a lot of energy to heat them. We decided we were going to try to put solar panels on the roof. And convention centers usually have some of the biggest roofs in a community. And so we put 1.65 megawatts of solar power on the roof of the Salt Palace Convention Center. It's one of the biggest rooftop solar projects in the nation. We were hoping to be the biggest, but financing didn't quite work out to do that. But we entered into a public-private partnership where actually somebody else owns the solar panels. They sell us the electricity, so it really didn't cost us very much money at all to put that on the Salt Palace Convention Center, because we're just buying the energy from somebody else. But there was some federal subsidies, so that helped drive down the rate that we're buying the energy from. But we do work together with our federal and state leaders to talk about how we can improve air quality. So, you know, for example, this new trolley line that's going in Sugar House, Mayor Becker primarily and Mayor Anderson before him went to the federal government and said, you know, we've got some air quality issues here. We think having more mass transit would be helpful to us. Will you help us fund this new trolley line? And they want to see some local support from the state government. So the state has to put in some money as well before the federal government money will put in any funding. And, of course, federal and state governments want the local governments to put in some funding as well to show that it is a joint effort to do this. So a lot of times, Tim, when we're doing programs and working with the federal government, they want to see state and local support for the programs as well. So unless they see it, they oftentimes they won't fund a program. So working together makes sense, and also it also helps bring funding into our community. Salt Lake County, for example, we got a $5 million sustainable communities grant. And the reason we got it, because our state and local governments, we were working with business as well in the nonprofit community, and so when the feds see us all working together, they're more willing to fund a program. I think that goes towards anything in life. If people are working together, people are more likely to support it. If people are fighting over an issue, then probably not going to get any funding or support otherwise for a program.
So I would like everybody to join me in thanking Peter Caroon for an excellent and informative forum. Thank you so much. Thank you.